It's a small agency, only 300 people, but it has big ambitions, preventing, mitigating, and resolving violent conflicts around the world. Most people know the U.S. Institute of Peace by the unusual architecture of its building, not far from the State Department. Nancy Lindborg is the new president of the Institute. She joins me now with more on the agency and its mission. Ms. Lindborg, great to have you on.
Good morning. Great to be here.
All right. So you've been on the job about 5 months now, correct?
Three and a half.
Oh, three and a half. Okay, so we can still call you the new president.
At least for now.
All right, so I guess the question that comes up a lot when people pass that building is who's in there and what do they do?
Well, who's in there is a mixture of people who have regional expertise in some of the areas where we have the worst conflicts around the world, particularly in places like the Middle East, Afghanistan, Africa, like Nigeria or South Sudan. And also we have technical experts, people who know how to train and who do research around what are the best and most effective ways to mediate conflict, what works, what doesn't work, how can we apply those lessons in the field.
Now, the USIP is roughly next door to the State Department. What is the relationship of it to the State Department?
USIP really works at the intersection of diplomacy, defense, and development. And so we have close relationships with State Department, USAID, Department of Defense, because the kind of conflicts that are the most problematic around the world really take all of those capabilities working together. And so we have partnerships with them here as well as in the conflict zones.
So give us an example of a piece of work you might be doing in a place, I don't know, on your website it mentions ISIS and Yemen. I mean, really the tough spots around the world.
Yeah, well, I just got back not too long ago from Afghanistan and Pakistan, where we have had a presence in Kabul for about 10 years now and are working to help peace builders really at every level, where we're working at the community level. I met with a group of university students who have now formed a peace club, and we have helped to develop curriculum for the universities, because after a country has been at war for 36 years, you really need to build peace not at just the top level, where we are also working in support of the negotiations that are hopefully going to start bubbling up, but also, you know, all the way down to the community and the family level, because as this law student at the university told me, violence just permeates every aspect of our society after 36 years of war. And so we have people on the ground who are supporting local organizations, local universities, find ways to resolve conflict so they don't become violent. And then we're also working at the more senior level, at the more top-down level, with convenings here in Washington. We hosted President Ghani when he was here, so that you connect all the parts of a country that are critical for building a more durable peace.
Now, when you look at the Middle East and I guess really a lot of areas contiguous to what we used to think of as strictly the Middle East, it comes down to conflict between Shia and Sunni Muslims. And that conflict goes back not 36 years, but hundreds and hundreds, 800 years. And it's almost like the Hatfields and McCoys. After a while, no one remembers what it is that they were mad about, but they really have trouble getting along even down until the latter day here. And so how can working with families and so forth overcome enmity that goes back centuries?
You know, conflicts are always very complicated by definition, and they are also very local. And so in various parts of the Middle East, it's a conflict that is sometimes between Shia and Sunni, sometimes it's between tribes of the same, you know, within the Sunnis or within the Shia. Sometimes it's more of an ethnic-based conflict. Often it's very related to a government that has created deep-seated grievances by excluding certain groups from having a better say, a better life in that country. And so conflicts are often manipulated by leadership, and they are often inflamed by either weak government or illegitimate government in the eyes of its citizens. And so it requires really understanding in a particular area, what are the drivers, what are the pushes and pulls that create conflict? Oftentimes, what we do is to create avenues for dialogue, avenues for bringing those tribes together or for bringing those leaders. And in Iraq, for example, where we've worked, we have had in localized areas success in bringing tribes together or across the Shia-Sunni divide to damp down conflict in a particular area or even make them more resistant to outside influences. I just got back from Burma, where there are lots of spoilers. There are lots of ways that people are seeking to create conflict. And so by helping a community become more resilient to those outside influences, one can mitigate the potential for more violent conflict erupting.
Because sometimes, in fact, aren't you dealing with conflicts where large nations are actually using that conflict as proxy?
It could be large nations. It could be business interests who don't want somebody to see what's going on over here, so they create conflict over there. It could be political parties. I mean, in any given conflict, you're likely to have spoilers. And sort of the classic that you can see in many, many countries is you get a bunch of, you get a gang of kids on motorcycles and have them roar into a community and disrupt it, which is what was happening in several places where I just visited in Burma.
All right, so let's talk about the department, or I shouldn't say the department, the agency itself. There's only 300 people. What kind of people do you look for to attract? Are you hiring right now? Give us some of the personnel side of what goes on.
Well, it's actually an institute, and it was founded about 30 years ago by an act of Congress. So we are a federally funded but independent bipartisan institute. We occupy a quite unique niche in the federal government with a bipartisan board, and we are always in a process of looking for good people. Our website indicates what jobs are available, it works in a way that is very much involved with partnerships and leveraging our capabilities and what we do with the actions and the funding of other partners, both throughout the government, but we also work on the ground with other organizations.
I was going to say your background is the U.S. Agency for International Development, in part, where you came from to join the USIP. And so I imagine that's another place that you must have bridges between.
We do. And, you know, I've spent almost 20 years working a bit more downstream after conflict erupts, doing a lot of humanitarian work, as well as working at that intersection of democracy, conflict, and humanitarian relief. What is very compelling for me about USIP is getting more upstream, because the more we're able to work before conflict becomes violent, the more cost-effective it is, the more lives are saved, and, you know, it very much is who we are as Americans. It's an opportunity to really serve as our nation's conflict management organization.
We're speaking with Nancy Lindborg. She is president of the U.S. Institute of Peace. And can you give us an example of a situation where you might have headed off violence so that it did not become headlines?
Yes, which is always an interesting question because it's hard to measure if violence didn't actually occur. But there are a number of instances in Iraq, for example, where working with these tribal dialogues, there was a significant reduction of conflict in those specific areas. Our goal going forward is to really be able to have a significant impact on either the duration or the intensity of at least three conflict zones around the world. And we also work thematically to share our tools, to train others, both educators and practitioners in the field, to have impact on their conflicts.
And how has social media affected the work that USIP does and how it affects its own work? Because that seems to have grown as a factor in a lot of groups in communicating their causes and their grievances throughout the world.
Yes, well, the world has changed significantly. And again, going back to Burma, you know, this was a country that had no cell phones within the last year. And now you've got a fast-moving penetration of cell phones and actually smartphones. And so you have an opportunity with the smartphones to really change how people communicate, how they understand what's going on in their community. Everybody's on Facebook. And so I met with a group of monks that we've helped to support who are using their Facebook pages to squash some of the rumors that whip around and create, you know, anxiety and potentially violent conflict. And we brought together there both people who have problems they want to solve and people who are tech whizzes to be able to bring additional technology, mainly media, social media, and, you know, app kind of approaches to bear on these problems. It just opens up a whole new universe of ways to tackle these critical issues, which often involve creating more effective communication and bringing people together, bridging divides.
And we've talked about the State Department and USAID, and what about DOD? What about the Defense Department? Because in some ways, they use techniques similar to what you have described in some of the areas that they are sent.
You know, we work with all three of those agencies and departments, especially with DOD. We've worked with them on doing different kinds of training so that frontline personnel have maybe additional training and mediation skills, which is so critical when you're out in conflict environments. And so we absolutely work with all three of those arms of government.
And what do you hope to accomplish in your time as president of USIP?
My big goal is that, you know, we continue to serve as really America's, you know, symbol of America's commitment to finding peaceful ways for change and to have a significant impact on at least three of these areas where there is conflict. Upstream from the violence that we see too much of around the world.
Nancy Lindborg is the president of the U.S. Institute of Peace. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Have a good day.